Section 2, Native American Cultures, An American Story. Did the Natchez people of the southeastern United States descend from the Toltec of Mesoamerica? A Natchez man told this story to a European explorer in the mid-1700s. Before we came into this land, we lived yonder under the sun, pointing with his finger nearly southwest, by which I understood that he meant Mexico. There our sons, Mexican rulers were called sons, had their abode, and our nation maintained itself for a long time. Our nation extended itself along the Great Water, Gulf of Mexico, where this large river, the Mississippi, loses itself. But as our enemies were become very numerous, our sons sent some of their subjects who lived near this river to examine whether we could return into the country through which it flowed. The country on the east side of the river, being found extremely pleasant, the great sun, upon the return of those who had examined it, ordered all his subjects who lived in the plains and who still defended themselves against the ancients of the country to remove into this land, here to build a temple. Quoted in America in 1492. The West. Although Mesoamerican civilization may have shaped Natchez society, the culture of most Native Americans developed in response to their environments. By the time the first Europeans arrived, Native Americans were fragmented into many small groups that had adapted to the different regions of North America. Fragmentation in the American West was especially severe because of the great variations in the region's climate and geography. The Southwest. The descendants of the Anasazi and the Hohokam lived in small groups in the arid Southwest. These groups included the Zuni, Hopi, and other Pueblo peoples. The people of the Southwest depended on corn to survive. Farmers cultivated several species of corn whose seeds could withstand the dry soil. With a long taproot, the corn grew deep, reaching moisture far below the surface. The farmers also grew squash and beans. Among these groups, when a man married, he joined the household of his bride's mother. Within the family, men's and women's work was separate. Men farmed and herded sheep. They also performed most ceremonies, made moccasins, and wove clothing and blankets. It was women's work to take care of the house. In addition, women crafted pottery and baskets and hauled water. The women also helped the men in two occupations, farming and constructing houses. When boys turned six, they joined the Kachina cult. A Kachina was a good spirit. The Pueblo people believed Kachinas visited their town each year with messages from the gods. Members of the Kachina cult would wear masks symbolizing the spirits, and they would dance to bring the spirits to the town. Sometime around the 1500s, two other peoples, the Apache and the Navajo, came to the region from the far northwest of North America. Although many of the Apache remained primarily nomadic hunters, the Navajo learned farming from the Pueblo people and lived in widely dispersed settlements where they grew corn, beans, and squash. The Pacific Coast. Many different groups, including the Tlingit, Haida, Kwakatools, Nootkas, Chinook, and Salish people, lived in the lands bordering the Pacific Ocean, from what is now southeastern Alaska to Washington State. Although they did not practice agriculture, these groups dwelt in permanent settlements. They looked to the dense coastal forests for lumber, which they used not only to build homes and to fashion canoes, but also to create elaborate works of art, ceremonial masks, and totem poles. They were able to stay in one place because the region's coastal waters and many rivers teemed with fish, particularly salmon. Farther inland, between the Cascade Range and the Rocky Mountains, the Nez Perce, Yakima, and other groups fished, hunted deer, and gathered roots and berries. South of the Nez Perce's territory, between the Sierra Nevada and Rocky Mountains, the climate was much drier. There, groups such as the Ute and Shoshone lived a nomadic life. Because the land was too arid for farming, they roamed widely in search of food that was often scarce. West of the Ute lands, in what is today Central California, several groups enjoyed abundant wildlife and a mild climate. The Pomo, for example, gathered acorns, caught fish in nets and traps, and snared small game and birds. Pomo hunters working together would drive deer toward a spot where the village's best archer waited, hidden and disguised in a deer head mask. Sometimes the hunters stampeded game into a corral where the animals could be easily killed. When game was scarce, however, the Pomo relied upon the acorn, which they had learned to convert from a hard, bitter nut into an edible flower. The Great Plains. When Europeans arrived in America, the people of the Great Plains were nomads. Before this, up until about 1500, people living on the Great Plains practiced agriculture. Influenced by the Hopewell and Mississippian cultures, these peoples lived near the Missouri and other rivers, where they could plant corn and find wood to build their homes. Around 1500, the peoples of the Western Plains abandoned their villages and became nomads, possibly because of war or drought. Those in the East, including the Pawnee, Kansas, and Iowa peoples, continued to farm as well as hunt. Peoples of the Western Plains, such as the Sioux, followed migrating buffalo herds on foot and lived in cone-shaped tents called teepees. Life for the Sioux and others on the Great Plains changed dramatically after they began taming horses. The Spanish had brought horses to North America in the 1500s. Over the next few centuries, as horses either escaped or were stolen, the animals spread northward, eventually reaching the Great Plains. There, the Sioux encountered and mastered them, and in the process became some of the world's greatest mounted hunters and warriors. Sioux men achieved fame in the community through bravery in both hunting and war. Sioux warriors would take the scalps of enemies they had killed, but they could gain even greater glory through the dangerous but nonviolent act of counting coup, from the French word meaning blow or touch. A warrior would charge into a group of the enemy and simply touch one of them with a stick as a means of humiliating the enemy, then gallop away. Reading check. Contrasting. How did Native Americans respond to the different climates of the American West? The Far North. Two different Native American groups made the Far North their home. The most northern and widespread were the Inuit, whose territory stretched across the Arctic from present-day Alaska to Greenland. The Aleut settled Alaska's Aleutian Islands. The Inuit and Aleut depended heavily upon hunting for their livelihood. They hunted seals, walruses, whales, polar bears, caribou, musk oxen, and smaller game. Over time, they invented a wide variety of devices to cope with the harsh environment, including the harpoon, the kayak, the dog sled, boots with ivory spikes for walking on ice, and special goggles to prevent snow blindness. They also were the only Native Americans to develop lamps. They used whale oil and blubber for fuel. Occupying a harsh and unforgiving land, they lived in groups, from a single family to a few hundred people, spaced widely apart. Reading check. Identifying. What technologies did the Native Americans of the Far North develop? The Eastern Woodlands. East of the Mississippi River and south of the Great Lakes lay almost a million square miles of woodlands. This landscape supported an amazing range of plant and animal life. Almost all of the Native Americans in the Eastern Woodlands provided for themselves by combining hunting and fishing with farming. Deer were plentiful in the region, and deer meat regularly supplemented the corn, beans, and squash the people planted. Deer hide was also used for clothing. The peoples of the Northeast. Most of the peoples of the Northeast were divided into two major language groups, those who spoke Algonquian languages and those who spoke Iroquoian languages. The Algonquian-speaking people included most of the groups living in what later became known as New England. Among these peoples were the Wampanoag in Massachusetts, the Narragansett in Rhode Island, and the Pequot in Connecticut. Farther south in what is today Virginia lived the Algonquian-speaking peoples of the Powhatan Confederacy. These groups of Native Americans in New England and Virginia were among the first to encounter English settlers. Other Algonquian-speaking peoples included the Delaware, who lived near the Delaware River, and the Shawnee, who lived in the Ohio River Valley. Many words from the Algonquian language are still used today, including succotash, hominy, moccasin, and papoose. Stretching from the Hudson River across what is today New York and southern Ontario, and north to Georgian Bay, were the Iroquoian-speaking peoples. They included the Huron, Neutral, Erie, Wenro, Seneca, Cayuga, Onondaga, Oneida, and Mohawk. Many peoples in the Northeast, including the Algonquians of New England and the Iroquoians of New York, practiced slash-and-burn agriculture. By cutting down parts of forests and then burning the cleared land, they were left with nitrogen-rich ashes, which they then worked into the soil, making it more fertile. The early peoples of the Northeast used several types of houses. Many villages enclosed by wooden stockades had large rectangular longhouses with barrel-shaped roofs covered in bark. Others built wigwams. These dwellings were either conical or dome-shaped and were made using bent poles covered with hides or bark. All of the Iroquoian peoples, as well as the Algonquian of New England, made beads of white and purple shells that they arranged on strings and wove into belts called wampum. The designs on the wampum recorded important events, treaties, and agreements. Government. The Iroquois League. All of the Iroquoian peoples had similar cultures. They lived in longhouses in large towns, which they protected by building stockades. The people lived in large kinship groups, or extended families, headed by the elder women of each clan. Iroquois women occupied positions of power and importance in their communities. They were responsible for the planting and harvesting of crops. Up to 10 related families lived together in each longhouse. Despite their similar cultures, war often erupted along the Iroquoian groups. In the late 1500s, five of the nations in western New York, the Seneca, Cayuga, Onondaga, Oneida, and Mohawk, formed an alliance to maintain peace. This alliance was later called the Iroquois League, or Iroquois Confederacy. Europeans called these five nations the Iroquois, even though other nations spoke Iroquoian as well. According to Iroquois tradition, Dekanunwida, a shaman or tribal elder, and Hiawatha, a chief of the Mohawk, founded the League. They were worried that war was tearing the five nations apart at a time when the more powerful Huron people threatened them all. The five nations agreed to the Great Binding Law, a constitution that defined how the Confederacy worked. Although the 50 chiefs who made up the ruling council of the Iroquois League were all men, the women who headed the kinship groups selected them. Council members were appointed for life, but the women could also get rid of an appointee if they disagreed with his actions. In this way, Iroquois women enjoyed considerable political influence. The peoples of the Southeast. Almost all of the people in the Southeast lived in towns. Women did most of the farming, while the men hunted deer, bear, wild fowl, and even alligator. The Mississippian culture influenced many of the people in the Southeast. The town buildings were arranged around a central plaza. Stockades usually surrounded the towns, although moats and earthen walls were also used. The houses were built out of poles and covered with grass, mud, or thatch. The Cherokee were the largest group in the Southeast. They lived in what is today western North Carolina and eastern Tennessee. About 20,000 Cherokee lived in some 60 towns when the Europeans arrived. The Cherokee and a nearby group of people called the Tuscarora were Iroquoian speakers. Other people in the Southeast included the Choctaw, Chickasaw, Natchez, and Creek. The Creek were a large group living in what is today Georgia and Alabama. They lived in about 50 villages that were divided into war towns, where the war leaders lived and men trained for war, and peace towns, where the political leaders lived. By the 1500s, Native Americans had created a wide array of cultures and languages. They had also developed economies and lifestyles well suited to the geography and climate in their particular corners of North America. Reading check. Analyzing. How did some woodlands Native Americans increase their crop yield? American literature. From the Constitution of the Five Nations. I am Dekanawida, and with the five nations' confederate lords, I plant the tree of great peace. The Mohawk lords are the foundation of the great peace, and it shall therefore be against the great binding law, or the Constitution, to pass measures in the Confederate Council after the Mohawk lords have protested against them. All the business of the Five Nations Confederate Council shall be conducted by the two combined bodies of Confederate lords. In all cases, the procedure must be as follows. When the Mohawk and Seneca lords have unanimously agreed upon a question, they shall report their decision to the Cayuga and Oneida lords, who shall deliberate upon the question and report a unanimous decision to the Mohawk lords. The Mohawk lords will then report the standing of the case to the Fire Keepers, or the Onondaga, who shall render a decision as they see fit in case of a disagreement by the two bodies. There shall be one war chief for each nation, and their duties shall be to carry messages for their lords and to take up the arms of war in case of emergency. They shall not participate in the Confederate Council. Whenever a very important matter or a great emergency is presented before the Confederate Council that affects the entire body of the five nations, the lords of the Confederacy must submit the matter to the decision of their people, and the decision of the people shall affect the decision of the Confederate Council.